Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Molly Green and
Darren Rudge.
Alan, it's Molly and Darren.
Hello, Molly and Darren.
Hello,
how are you?
You recognise us?
I do.
Yeah, sure you do.
The Happy Garden.
And a very warm welcome to the Happy Garden podcast. My name is Molly and this here is your expert, Darren Rudge.
Hello,
Dazzler. And I hope, dear pod people, whenever you are listening to this, that the sun is shining down on you. Because as Darren and I record this, it is the most beautiful sunny autumn day. The air smells clean and fresh and earthy. The colours of the trees against the blue sky are breathtaking. It is like being plugged in and being recharged. Do you feel like that today, Darren?
I do. It's glorious. And it's a nice sharp day, isn't it?
It
once
is.
Once you get outside.
And there's a bit of a breeze. I've got all the dog bedding outside.
Makes you feel good to be alive.
It does. It makes you feel alive. One thing that isn't so good, Darren, and you did text me a good 20 minutes ago to say you're ready for recording, and I was a little late dialing you because I was chasing a massive fly around the house with a tea towel. I did get it out in the end, though. Big black flies everywhere. I quite miss you today because you were literally knee to knee with me this time last week in this ear room.
That's right, but my neck's recovered after being just on a short lead.
Literally.
My headphones. So,
is it good to be back home?
I am missing you, but I'm not.
Darren's headphone wire is the size, or the length, should I say, of a shoestring. So I plugged Darren into the equipment in this room last week, and you were like bent over like that, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
Every time you laughed, you tried to throw your head back and got whipped back down again. It's quite funny.
Just like having whiplash.
Anyway, I'm here in my pod room and our Darren's in his house as well. But we're with you with a really, really packed podcast. We're in double figures now. This is pod 10, isn't it, Adas?
Yes, double figures.
Yay.
10 weeks, Rawr, Molly.
Yeah! So thank you if you're still listening. This week we have an awful lot to get through. We've got Andy Lowndes a little bit later on, award-winning author, historian and presenter. Andy Lowndes, history of foxgloves today.
Wow.
Darren. And that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Paul Hetherington from Bug Life, he's going to join us. We're talking spiders, garden spiders, house spiders, where they fit into the chain of your garden. I know you're doing money saving today, aren't you?
I am. I'm doing a money saving tip. I've got propagating bulbs. If you naughty people have not got your spring bulbs into the ground yet, well, just hang back, hang fire a little, because how would you like to propagate 20 plants from one bulb? I'm going to tell you how to.
What?
Gardening jokes for the week, Molly. I've got 5 good ones today. And then probably some jobs for people to be up to. How about that?
All of this and more still to come on
The Happy Garden
with Molly Green and Darren Rudge.
Darren?
Hello.
What do you call a Spanish guy who's been discharged from hospital?
I don't know.
Manuel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Manuel. Right, shall we start with some jobs for the week ahead? The weather looks... well, it looks okay. It looks fine. It's autumnal. Do you want me to have a quick look before we start?
Okay. I think it'll be a bit windy, a bit wet.
Yeah.
There's a few sunny spells.
Yes.
It's autumn.
It is. You're absolutely spot on. It's around 11, 12 degrees across the UK and everything Darren just said.
My bunion was right then.
Your bunion. Has it been throbbing?
Yeah, it was throbbing.
Was it throbbing?
Yeah.
Let's do some jobs for the week ahead then, Darren.
Now in the happy garden.
Okay.
Oh, I say, sweetie, this is my favourite bit. Time for Darren to be absolutely flabulous and regale us with his gardening jobs for the week ahead.
Well, yes. Go.
OK, folks, so it's time to tidy up those roses. So really it's time to give them a good cut back and shorten those stems to prevent wind rocking. Over the autumn months and into the winter, if you get a windy day, then it can tear the root system. So do prune your roses back by at least half. Losses of trees and shrubs planted in water-sodden ground, especially the rain that we've had in this country over the last few weeks, can be problematic. So do have a look at your plants, have a look at the soil around and about, and just give a little bit of a dig around if you can do, just to aerate the soil and to relieve that water pressure, especially around newly planted plants. You can prune lower branches of garden trees and shrubs off as well to let light in for the autumn and the winter period. Now, plant any spring bulbs that you have right now, folks. So get them into the ground, you naughty people, if you haven't already done so.
How did I know you were going to use the words naughty people whilst talking about...
Well, books? They are naughty people. I've been telling them since podcast 6.
Yeah, you have.
I mean, I'm podcast 10 now.
To be fair, you have. And do you know, I still haven't got any in. I haven't bought any, though, in my defence. I know, I haven't done them yet. Naughty, naughty Molly. Oh, Darren, I forgot to tell you. I've got the podcast phone out.
Because
do you know, we have... I don't think we've used the phone. Here it is. I don't think we've used this phone, which I pay £7.50 a month for the podcast. I think we've used it once on podcast one. Then it's been in a lead-lined drawer since then. So let me give you the question, and we do have a phone number that goes with it, so I thought... Why not? So the question that we had on the email, which is thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com, you would be more than welcome to get in touch. thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com. And this question is from Keith in Earlswood. He says, "Hello, Molly, Darren. I've just had a week of hospital and doctors. It started with a red thumb that started to spread at my arm. The doctors thought it was a bite or a thorn that had caused it. Could you do a bit on care in the garden, i.e. gloves, etc.? What do you think? Hope you're both well. Enjoy your programme. Perhaps speak to you, Keith." So shall I just give him a bell, Dazzler?
Yeah, let's give him a call.
Give him a call.
Do you think he's in?
Well, only one way to find out. 8, 4, 9, 8, 9, 8, 9, 8, 7. See if he's in. Well, there he goes, ringing.
Hello.
Hey, Keith, it's Molly.
Hello, Molly. How are you today?
Oh, you're in. Really well, thank you. How are you enjoying this sparkling autumn sunshine, Keith?
It was lovely this morning. We played golf at 8 o'clock.
Oh, did you win?
It went. No, we're not that serious in this weather.
Bit of fun. Oh, I bet it was wet underfoot, wasn't it, on the course?
Yeah, you just got to keep changing your swing and hoping for the best. But we enjoy it. We were out there and that's all that mattered.
Oh, just beautiful, beautiful day to be out and about. Listen, I got your email about your thumb and your hand. Firstly, before I introduce you to Darren, how are you doing with all the hospital and the doctors?
It's quite cured now. I've still got a bit of skin coming off my hand, but the pain's all gone. I can do most things now. But I wouldn't wish it on anyone, Molly.
And it was something from the garden. Let's introduce our Dazzler. Darren Keith. Keith Darren.
Hi, you, Keith.
Hello, Darren. Are you all right?
I'm all right, thank you. And are you well?
Yeah, I say I'm recovering now. I did lose a lot of weight and I lost that much sleep in 2 in the week. It's not much fun being in hospital.
And where do you think this came from, Keith?
I put it down to it, either a rose or a bite. a spike off a rose. I do remember, you see a bit of blood, you just wipe it or you just put it under the tap.
Yeah.
But I can't actually remember exactly where it happened.
So, Keith, it's a really important point that you bring up, because roses in particular, that one of their defence mechanisms, sounds pretty obvious, doesn't it, is their thorns. But it's not just the prick of the thorn. The thorn is actually laden with bacteria. So it's absolutely ram, jam, cram full of bacteria. So if you get a prick off a thorn, you should really wash your hands straight away and sterilise the area. If you leave a thorn in there, that's even worse, because the bacteria can just infest and then it can become septic, which is probably what happened to your finger, you know, when you got this prick. And like you say, us gardeners, we're roughy-tufty people, aren't we? And we just basically just wipe it off and that's it, job done. It does prove a massive point about roses and thorns. The prick itself can be dangerous because that can let in things, can't it? But the actual thorn itself is laden with bacteria. Hopefully you're up well and truly on the mend now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, because the speed it spread at going up my arm.
Yeah.
What was the timeline, Keith? Did it happen the same day? You had a prick, you wiped off the blood,
no,
you carried on?
I don't actually. The first thing I seen was this purple thumb. I put some germaline on it, but that didn't do anything.
Same day.
I was on the Friday.
Yeah.
So then I went straight to the doctor, straight to the chemist, and he said, ring 111.
Oh, gosh.
So I rung 111, I got an appointment. They had a look at it. They said, if it gets any worse, come back. That was on the Saturday, so I rung up on the Saturday, and they said, well, you can't just go back. We'll send an ambulance out. We'll send a doctor out. He came out at 3 o'clock the next morning. He sent for an ambulance, which came out afterwards, and then we went to hospital.
So was this possible sepsis? Was it tracking up your arm, the infection?
Oh, yeah. It was good. You could see it going up the veins. Each day, they just do the line where it was, so that it was exactly how far it had travelled.
Well, Darren, as you mentioned, is a great point, well raised. I take it, Darren, would you just always advocate gloves?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously with roses, you need really thick gloves to be utilising, you know, almost the gauntlet type. I really advocate the thinner gloves when you're doing just ordinary garden tasks, because you shouldn't really be touching the soil, because of the stuff that's actually contained within the soil. And if you're prone to the sort of stuff that Keith might be prone to, then you'll pick it up really, really quickly. And lockjaw is still out there, folks. I mean, you know, we often think about lockjaw as a thing that's in the past, but no, make sure your tetanus is up to date. Always check with your GP, because, you know, it's always better to be safe than sorry. And Keith, unfortunately, you're case in point, aren't you, really, at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, I've been gardening for 60 years.
Yeah.
And I've never had any problem. And then it's just this silly one, and bang, you're gone.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
All it takes.
Well, thank the Lord they acted quickly for you, Keith.
Keith, all that aside, and as to echo what Darren said, thank goodness you're okay. How has your garden been this year? How's it growing? All good?
Up and down. I think the garden thought autumn had come in August.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a bad crop. The angel's trumpets didn't do too good. And, of course, you know about the morning glory.
Everybody knows about your morning glory.
And I sent you the photos of the flowers to show I was genuine.
Oh, no, photos are always lovely when you guys email in. An attached photo is fabulous. So thank you for letting us see that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Keith, thank you ever so much for having a word with us. You've got a nice afternoon planned. Now you're back off the golf course.
No, not a lot. I'm just having a little pond around the garden. That's it.
Perfect. Yeah. Sounds like a nice afternoon in my book. Well, listen, we will speak to you again on the Happy Garden Podcast. You are always more than welcome.
Yeah,
I
still listen to you on your blog.
Brilliant. Lovely to have you with us, Keith.
Thanks, Keith.
And you, both of you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye, Keith.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, isn't he lovely? Love Keith.
Yeah, so what a great guy. And just a case in point that it's better to be safe than sorry, isn't it?
Yeah.
And now, wear your gardening gloves, folks. And some people say, I can't wear gardening gloves, but there are the latex ones, which are as good as skin. So,
yeah, but still, you know, give you protection. Yeah. I do remember you doing a feature for us, and it was after an event that happened to me, and it makes me feel queasy just thinking about it. I had no gloves on, and I was potting, and my hand I won't give too many details here because honestly, it sends me crazy thinking about it. My hand was in the potting compost bag, you know, the big bag, and a splinter of something went underneath my nail. I mean, really underneath my nail. I remember you doing a feature on the hazards of gardening, and that was one of them regarding gloves. Just sticking your hand blind into compost can be a bad thing.
Well, especially recycled compost that possibly comes from your local authority because you cannot be sure what's in that. Yeah, they say they recycle it and, you know, I have found personally all sorts of things in there. So glass.
Oh, like what? That sounds interesting.
Well, glass, wood chip.
Oh.
I found nappies in there, Molly.
Really?
So, yeah, really.
Yeah.
Just be careful out there, folks. It might be cheap for a reason. You only get what you pay for in this world, don't you? Just be really, really careful. Just check before you actually, you know, you start working through blindly.
Yeah.
Because it just takes a second, doesn't it? Or a millisecond. And that's it. You're off to hospital.
I think I said this to you on the back of when you did do that feature, to reiterate. And it's not as fine as council bought compost. It wasn't bagged, but you know I metal detect. And I was on a farmer's field who had bought council compost. As I say, not as refined as, you know, a 20-litre bag or anything. He'd bought it in bulk and he'd spread it on his field. And it ruined the history of the field because it was so contaminated with bouncy balls, children's toys, crisp packets, Kit Kat wrappers. There was so much rubbish in there, and it was supposed to have been sieved and sorted through and everything, but you know, it's not a catch-all system, is it, the recycling industry? So you're absolutely right, Dazzler. It's not 100%.
No, not at all. No, if you buy that sort of stuff, just be very, very careful and just check it.
If you'd like to get in touch with Molly Green and Darren Rudge at the Happy Garden Podcast, then all you have to do is follow them on social media. Just search for the Happy Garden Podcast. If you'd like to send them an email at the Happy Garden Podcast, you can email thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com. Can we say Happy Garden Podcast just one more time? The Happy Garden Podcast.
We're going to be back very, very shortly with a question Sarah's sent in about a rose that has mysteriously changed colour. Have I sent you the picture of this?
Yeah, this is a good question.
Yeah, that's good. We'll do that very, very shortly. Right now, though, and it's something you guys have been asking us to talk about. In fact, I think you preliminarily raised this a few weeks ago, Darren, just how many spiders, Boris spiders, are in the house.
Yeah, they're all coming indoors now, aren't they?
Well, that you see now, listen, this is what I thought. This is what I thought, that there are outdoor spiders coming in.
Oh.
No, well.
Are they not?
Well, apparently not, as we're about to be told, because in the week I spoke to Paul Hetherington, our very good friend. He's one of our best friends on the podcast now, isn't he, Paul? He's lovely. From Bug Life, talking about spiders. Now, part one coming up. And first question was, are house spiders simply garden spiders coming in?
Not at all, no. Garden spiders will generally just live outside, and house spiders tend to live inside. And house spiders are really what has developed from things that used to be cave living spiders and similar. So they've always lived in this sort of under sort of cover space, whereas your garden spider always lived outdoors.
So would a house spider be in the garden during the summer months? I mean, we only sort of tend to see them now. So how does all that work?
Your house spider will spend virtually the entirety of its life within your house. You generally don't see them because they like to avoid humans because we're kind of large and frightening to them. And they'll be found in places like the attic, under floorboards, you know, all these sort of places we don't tend to look, or on the underside of your sofa, anywhere that you're unlikely to see them. But at this time of year, you tend to see them a lot more because this is when they have to start putting on display in a show in order to attract another spider, because it's mating time for spiders. They're in the mood for love.
So you're telling me that the massive Boris spiders, as big as a teacup, they're here all the time. We just don't see them, the big ones.
Yeah, they will be living out of sight. And again, they're generally nocturnal animals. So unless you're doing a late night shift, you're unlikely to see them, and you put the light on and they'll scurry out of the way. You're very unlikely to see them at other times of the year, but this is the time of year when they've got to get out there. They've got to impress in order to be able to procreate.
Have you ever seen, I was going to say I've never seen a spider having sexuals, procreating? It's something that we just don't see. Is it anything you've witnessed, or do they do that in private as well?
No, you can see it happening. The males are generally considerably smaller than the female.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a one-shot job for the male, because virtually every time at the end of it, the female catches the male and wraps him up to be a nice little supper. It's one shot only for them.
Whoa, literally.
If they're very fast, they might get away with two. But that's about the limit for a male spider.
If they're very fast. They must know what's coming. I suppose some do leg it.
Yeah, but it's about survival of the species, isn't it? I mean, one of the most beautiful spiders is the ladybird spider. And it's only the male that takes on that beautiful red ladybird-like appearance. And they only take that on when they're ready to mate, which is almost 7 years into their lifespan. And they'll last for about 2 months. And probably mate twice during that time before the female catches them, and that's it.
Paul, I've never even heard of a ladybird spider. Is that an indoor or an outdoor?
Very much an outdoor spider. It's one of the rarest spiders now in the UK. It used to be found anywhere from the New Forest round to the Lizard. Bug Life actually been doing some work with this spider, because when we started with it, it was literally left on one site on the Dorset Heath, about the size of a tennis court.
Yeah.
And police say it's now 19 separate sites. If you have a holiday in the Mediterranean, particularly places like Greece or Turkey, you may well see a very close relative of it, because they also have ladybird spiders over there. They're slightly different to our one, but very, very similar.
As far as UK gardens go, Paul, are most of the things we have here native, or do we have the same problem that we have with lots of things globally now, where spiders are imported, well, in all sorts of global traffic, and we do have non-natives here now?
We do have a number of non-native species that have managed to establish themselves in the UK. Most notably, I suppose, is the noble false widow spider, which has come across and originally was only found down in sort of southern parts and generally died out over winter and then repopulated in the summer coming in from abroad. It's now found across much of the UK, and it is breeding over here. And that's one of the few spiders in the UK that's capable of biting human skin, and it is slightly venomous. Then there's also the wasp spider, which again is a non-native and was originally confined to a small area on the south coast. But you will now find it anywhere really from the Midlands and across into the sort of South Wales and all the way down. It is a very beautiful spider. It has its name because its body is striped like a wasp, yellow and black stripes. Very, very, very easy to spot if you're out. And it's out in the meadows, I'm laying webs, whereas your noble false widow is a house spider.
Paul Hetherington there from Bug Life. We'll be back with Paul in a little while, asking just how important spiders are to the chain of the garden, where they sit, what they exactly do. Here you are, Darren, one-shot job.
What can you say?
What can you say? Yeah. One-shot job.
Those blokes have a terrible time, don't they?
Occasionally.
You know.
I did see, I will put up on the Facebook page, there was a big Boris spider on the wall the other day. I mean, the size of a teacup. And it was dead a couple of days later. And I did think, I hope you enjoyed yourself. I hope it was worth it.
Had he not got one leg out in a fist pump? Yes!
Yeah, I did it. Poor thing. Well, that's nature. Nature, very cruel.
Yeah, nature's very cruel. And it's recycling, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Yeah, it is. Anyway, Paul back with us in a little while here on the Happy Garden Podcast.
One-shot job.
I know, I like that description. Two if they're very, very lucky and quick.
A gigolo.
In comparative terms. Right, let's get back to the emails. Darren is here for you to... what's the word? Interrogate. I don't know.
Interrogate.
Pick his brains.
Yeah, it's not a one-shot job.
He's here for you. He's more than a one-shot job. So much more. He's here for you, let's just say that. The Happy Garden Podcast at gmail.com is our email, thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com. But we are on the Facebook page as well, The Happy Garden Podcast on Facebook. And, of course, I've got mine, Molly Green with an IE, and Darren has his how you think you'd spell Darren Rudge. Am I right? Although you do have several, so you're the one in the blue shirt.
Yeah, in the blue shirt. Not the one with the pumpkin on.
No, that's a different one. Although I do like that. I like that picture.
Yeah, you took that picture.
I did take that picture, didn't I?
You did, yeah.
That seems a long time ago.
It does, yeah.
Anyway, listen, our email is open if you want to add Darren. So let's get on to another one here. Lovely Molly and Darren.
Oh, thank you.
No, lovely Molly, comma, and Darren.
Oh, right, okay. All right.
There's no comma, I'm kidding.
Got it. No comment.
Got it.
All right. I know my position.
You know, I emailed David Austin in the summer as my Lady of Shalott changed from deep orange to a sort of ivory cream colour. Brackets, my rose was from David Austin about 10 years ago. I have deleted the reply, Molly, but they did suggest I had moved it a couple of years ago and this might be the reason. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, it's quite often the case that if you move a rose to a different part of the garden, or actually if you move house, then you're dealing with different conditions. So you're dealing with different ground conditions. Even if you move it to a different part of the garden, folks, the pH can be different, or the ground conditions can be actually different. Even in a small garden, you can have several different conditions to actually be dealing with. This can affect the colour of flowers quite drastically, because plants use pH, you know, the as acid or alkaline scales, as we call them, or neutral, which is the what we really want to be growing in, as pigments. They affect the pigment that's actually in the flower itself, in this case, with Sarah's rose. So it can deepen pigments, but as well as it can extract colours from roses themselves. What else affects plants is temperature and sunlight and things like that in a garden space. So if you've moved your rose and it's colder, again, the colour could change slightly or significantly if the temperature differences are significantly different to where you had that rose to begin with, Sarah. So I'm not surprised that your rose may well have changed colour, because you've moved it probably to a different part of the garden, or you may have moved address. Those are the issues for the rose itself, and the effects are caused by things like ground conditions, contains more water, or the pH is slightly different, or whether the above ground conditions are different. Perhaps it's in full sun, or it might be windier, or it might be colder. All those things can have effect on the way our plants flower and the actual colour the flowers produce. It's a really fantastic question, Molly. It really, really is, because people can't sort of fathom why flowers would suddenly change colour, but they do. And they extract those tones and those pigments from the flower because they're not given to them by the conditions that they're actually growing in. And that's the answer to Sarah's question, undoubtedly.
I do feel duty bound to wheel out the Pete Waterman story.
Okay.
The lilies.
Yeah, lilies.
Darren and I, every year, you'll find us at Gardeners World Live at the NEC in Birmingham. We grew up there, didn't we, Darren? We've been going there since the year dot. Darren, I just go for a jolly. Darren actually works. You're one of the experts there, aren't you, on the stage?
Yeah.
and we used to work for quite some time with Pete Waterman. Lovely Pete Waterman. We love Pete, don't we? He's us.
Yeah.
And he's quite a gardener. He's got a gardener.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. but he does love his garden. So one year, Darren and I were at the NEC, and because we're working there, and I think I was working there as well, you get to stay behind. And of a Sunday at 4 o'clock, it's about 4 o'clock it closes, 5 o'clock, Darren, so they start to sell off all the plants and people don't want to, the growers and the exhibitors don't want to take things home.
No.
They don't want to take things home with them. So because Darren and I were working there, obviously the show's closed and Darren and I are still there and, you know, access all areas. So there again, I don't think I can drag you into my skip dipping story. Totally. Although, can I? Because I was holding on
to your ankles.
I was getting food out of the bins. Because the cafes and everything. Everything went into the skip and it was all absolutely fine. So, yeah, I was getting it back out of the skip. And when it came to the lily bulbs, yeah, I instructed Darren to be my accomplice and hold my ankles. Which you did willingly, because you were going to reap some of the benefits as well. Because one skip was full of lily bulbs, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which we'd seen earlier in the day being sold for a fortune. So Darren and I went and scavenged loads of them, and we were really nice, weren't we? And we gave some to charity, and we gave lots to everybody at work. Pete Waterman being one of the recipients. So it transpired they were the most beautiful yellow lilies. Absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. I mean, they were sort of show quality, weren't they, Darren? They were lovely. And we'd given some to Pete and he was really happy and everything. And then the next year, the strangest thing happened. All of our lilies, Pete's, mine, yours, Darren, they all turned the most vibrant. It was almost like a smarty orange. And they were horrible, horrible. And Pete was livid. I do remember. He was absolutely, he was fuming because they were horrible when they were orange. But they just changed colour year on year.
Yeah. So, and this is the reason why. And it's strange that they did it in all our gardens, but obviously, you know, they need a particular pH. It's probably why they didn't sell them as in the skip.
Maybe. But it wasn't just a different shade. They totally turned, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. And it can affect. I mean, some lilies are just pot-bound, so you just pop them in pots and use a particular compost. So it may have been something like that. And soil conditions affects the actual colour of the flower. Once they settled in, they actually change.
I remember
so there you go.
He said that he looked like his garden had been tangoed. He was really angry. He made his gardener dig them all up.
Now, aquilegias are another plant we can talk about colour changes, Molly, but they're naughty flowers, aquilegias. Because you can plant aquilegias and they are one colour one year, and then the next year they've changed colour. And actually what you've got is not the actual aquilegias that you bought, because they just seed everywhere, don't they? Because aquilegias are promiscuous.
They cross.
Yeah, exactly.
One shot job.
They cross pollinate really freely, and what you end up with in the second year is a cross between two different types of aquilegia and a different coloured plant. So there you go. So it works both ways, doesn't it?
The Happy Garden Podcast.
I'm Adam Frost, and you're listening to the Happy Garden Podcast with Molly Green and that Darren Rudge fella.
We will be back with your questions very, very shortly. John's got a question about overwintering begonias for you, Adazler, which we'll get to in a little while.
Great.
TheHappyGardenPodcast@gmail.com is our email for any questions that you like. Now, Hawthorn news. I thought I'd squeeze this in at this juncture of the Happy Garden Podcast, Darren. Some good news.
Go on, then.
A bumper hawthorn berry crop has happened this autumn already. It's the biggest since records began 20 years ago, and it's bringing a massive boost for wildlife. Saw this in the papers the week just gone. Hedgerows, woodlands right across the UK are awash with red berries, which nature experts at the Woodland Trust are describing as one of the biggest crops ever, which is great news. And this could prove vitally important for migrating birds that have been battered or blown off course, because, of course, we've had all the high winds and we've had several storms, Ciarán being the latest one. So the migratory birds will really, really find this advantageous. And Dr. Judith Garforth, who's from the Woodland Trust Citizen Science Project, says it's really, really good news for all wildlife, and haws are eaten by migrating birds such as redwings and fieldfares and thrushes, as well as small mammals. We've got an exceptional crop at the moment, and it's been put down to a mild spring where temperatures, as we know, were above average. And the white hawthorn flower blooms, I remember this, Darren, when they were pollinated, obviously it's those that go on to produce the red fruits in autumn. But the hawthorn flowers earlier on this year started to open in spring, and the data shows that the national average of the first flowering of hawthorn was May the 1st this year. I remember that being in the news. And that apparently is perfect timing for the common name, the May tree, obviously the 1st of May. And the warm, dry weather in May, also ideal for pollinating insects as well. So a cumulative effect that we have got the biggest bumper crop, which is brilliant news for migrating birds and all wildlife.
And it has been a dazzling display. It's quite correct. I mean, hawthorn. I do a lot of walking, so...
You do, don't you?
I do up and down canal towpaths, and hawthorn has been stunning this year. Along with Pyracantha and Cotoneaster, I have to say. Pyracanthas this year have been really, really gorgeous, folks, and Cotoneasters. I think we might be in for a decent winter, you know, because that's the old fallacy, I think. That
Decent good or decent bad?
Decent bad.
Oh.
Yeah, get lots of fruit and...
We should do a little slot on old adages, you know, old wives' tales, you know.
We can do, no problem. I could do some research on
that. Yeah, should we do that next week? Stuff.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, that would be nice. I've got one.
Go on, mate.
It's not seasonal, but it's just a saying. Red sky at night.
Yes.
Bloody barns alight. So we can start with that one, but yeah, we'll add to the list.
Fire!
The fair's on fire. But I do remember waxing lyrical with you in May about hawthorn, and when you drive, you know, drive down the dual carriageway wherever you are, and you know, you're tree lined either side, or hedgerow lined either side, should I say, in the case of hawthorn, and the blossom was like breaking waves. It was like the parting of the sea, but it was just so amazing. The white blossom cascading over the hedgerows was just a sight to behold in the spring of this year.
Gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. It's a gorgeous tree anyway. And, you know, hawthorn is wonderful, absolutely superb for wildlife. Over 1,500 invertebrates will occupy a hawthorn tree, folks.
Really?
So, yeah, definitely. So if you're actually going to plant something, plant a hawthorn. Crataegus monogena is a wonderful, wonderful indigenous tree for this country. Sticks them in the ground, and, of course, you can make hedges from them, as Molly says, or mix them into a wildlife hedge with quickthorn, blackthorn, Rosa rugosa, all those sorts of things. Get a clematis in there, a honeysuckle in there, and you'll have a wonderful, wonderful habitat for things just to come in and make a wonderful, happy, happy home.
In the diary.
Ooh.
I'm actually going to put that in as a potential slot.
Oh, yes.
What makes a good hedge?
Yeah.
I mean, you've just outlined a few there, but should we do a hedge slot at some point?
We can do a hedge slot
point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the diary.
So we can talk about formal hedges, informal hedges, small hedges,
security
big hedges,
security
hedges. Yeah, most definitely. And what is the benefit of a hedge? Yeah, definitely.
Okay. It'll be entitled Hedge. With Darren Rudge.
Or hedge your bets.
Oh wait, Darren. That was brilliant. Rudge Hedge. Hedge Rudge. Fredge.
We could start a hedge fund.
Oh, wait, you can have another one.
Thank you.
You're well. You're on fire today, Darren. I'm
on
very,
fire.
Very pleased with you.
It's because I've had my hair cut.
Have you? Oh, no. Yeah. Now, let me tell you, dear pod listener, if you don't know, I didn't know Darren had had his hair cut, but I do know Darren. And when Darren has his hair cut, he doesn't just have his hair cut. You have the full experience. Have you been to...
Oh, I have, yes.
Have you had the full experience?
Oh, I've had the full experience.
Oh, tell it all.
From Josh.
What's Josh done to you? Oh, describe it.
Well, yes. You know, he manipulates my hair. And then it's the hot towels at the end.
Is it now?
It's just, you know, I get a bit worried because they manipulate your eyeballs. They've got the hot towel on and then they sort of push into your eyeballs. And I'm thinking if you push much harder, you'll be into the brain.
So do you go to Turkish barbers?
I don't normally, no.
Oh, it's not Turkish. No. It's just the barber experience.
Yeah. It's just a pretty unique barber shop where I go, because it's.
Has it got frosted windows?
No.
Okay. What's unique about it then?
Well, it's sort of Peaky Blinderish. You know, I like Peaky Blinders.
I do, yeah.
And for people in Ho Chi Minh City. You'll have to look it up on the interweb. But it's sort of like that. It's like a really old-fashioned shop, and I just have a scissors cut and things like that. But you'll be pleased because I've kept the bulk of my beard this time. I haven't had my beard sort of trimmed back to I normally have a number four done on my beard. But
You had a big beard when I saw you last week.
Yeah. Well, I've sort of had it trimmed up and tidied.
Yeah.
But actually, the depth and the bulk is still there.
Oh, good.
I'll send you a photo.
The depth and the bulk. Yeah, send me a photo of your depth and bulk. That would be brilliant. Send it now. Do a little selfie and send me
Okay.
Come on, I've got my phone with me now.
Let's see if I can...
See, Darren and I were together this time last week. We were knee to knee in this room. And now Darren's gone home to the Black Country.
Have you got it?
Oh, there you are. Do you know who you look like?
Who is it now? Be careful.
No, just with your gorgeous smile. You smile like Stan Laurel. Your whole face lights up. You're so sweet, Darren.
Thank you.
Oh, no, I quite like the, what did you say, the depth and the...
And the bulk.
The bulk. No, it's a good depth and bulk.
And Josh recommended that, you see.
That's good old Josh.
I said, I like your depth and bulk.
We'll keep it. Oh, that's nice. Good.
Yeah.
Right, let's carry on. Right, where are we now? We've done that.
Are we on page two yet?
We are on page two, yeah.
Oh, we're doing well today.
We've got Andy. We've got Andy Lown coming up very, very shortly. Gorgeous Andy with the history of the foxglove, which would be very interesting. However, let's get back to Paul Hetherington from Bug Life. Now, we've already heard about, is a garden spider a house spider that's outside? Is a house spider a garden spider that's inside? We've busted that myth. Let's find out now just how important spiders are in the chain of the garden. Paul, we get asked ever so often on the Happy Garden podcast, obviously we talk about gardens, and about how the garden works, the chain. How important are spiders in the chain, in the life of the garden?
Spiders are crucially important in the whole web of life, if you excuse the pun there.
Good.
They catch all sorts of flying insects and keep them under control. And if you ever look at a spider's web, particularly in the summer months, you'll see it full of things like aphids. So they're really good at so-called pest control. But also, of course, they are a great food source for things like birds, but also beyond birds, some of the smaller mammals like voles will eat spiders, hedgehogs may eat spiders, even badgers might eat spiders. So they are providing food in the food chain for some of the sort of, you know, higher up the chain, but they're so important for keeping the things that we consider to be garden pests under control and in check and keeping numbers down.
One thing we can appreciate the beauty of, Paul, is their webs. Wow. I was out the other morning. In fact, it was my husband that pointed it out to me. There was a most beautiful spider's web. I mean, I don't know what created it. Oh, obviously a spider. I don't know which type created it. But it had strands that were going up a good 7 foot up to the top of the sunflower heads. How on earth they engineered that? I mean, they must have... Well, I don't know, either leapt off the sunflower head and landed somewhere and anchored, or... I mean, the engineering is amazing of a web.
Yeah, I mean, they are fantastic, and that will almost certainly be one of the orb web spiders, which, of course, you find in the garden, such as the garden cross spider, which is the most common one. And, yeah, they do make webs that are, you know, 3-4 metres across sometimes, so incredible feats of engineering. And this is a great time of year to really appreciate them. If it's been sort of, yeah, that little bit cold overnight, you'll go out and you've got the dew glistening on the spider's webs that really shows them up. Incredible work, built really, really quickly. And of course, spider's web is a really, really strong material.
How would they do that? How would an orb or whatever type of spider build webs that large? Do they literally leap off things and the breeze takes them? Or do they know where they're going? How on earth is that made?
Well, I mean, initially they will, you know, to get the first long strands in, they may well have to do a big leap from faith, you know, A to B. But they'll then start to move it out and stretch it out into other places. But I mean, spiders are so incredible the way they can use their web. There's a number of spiders, and a lot of the money spiders in particular, use webs to disperse, because when spiders have their babies, you get this big cluster of them in an area, and then when they all hatch out, the little spiderlings go up to a height and they make themselves a tiny little piece of webbing like a parachute on a windy day, and then the wind carries them off. And that's how they disperse. Otherwise, you'd end up with hundreds of spiders all in one spot competing with one another. But by, you know, this clever method of dispersal, they spread themselves around.
How long do they live, spiders?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Or is it different for every species?
It depends from species to species. But, I mean, some of the larger spiders, you know, tarantulas and that, which people often do keep as pets, you're looking at 7-8 year lifespan for something that sort of size. And, well, again, the ladybird spider, that will live around about 7 years.
Well, just as a final question, we're autumn now, we're talking spiders, we're seeing them everywhere. Paul, when it comes to proper deep winter, where are the garden spiders? I mean, they don't sort of hibernate as such, do they? But where do they live? Where do they hide? Where do they survive in our gardens in the winter?
So they will look for places that will provide a degree of shelter from the cold. So it's in leaf piles, in loose bits of bark on trees. And nowadays, of course, they'll go into things like louvre shuttering on the outside of a building and some of these sort of, you know, bug boxes that people create for them to go into. Smaller spiders can easily crawl into a fir cone. So basically something that's going to give them that little bit of protection from the cold.
Paul Hetherington there from Bug Life. No doubt he'll join us again on the Happy Garden podcast soon. Yeah, as strange as they do look, Darren, they are amazing. They're phenomenal little creatures, spiders.
Spiders are great, aren't they? Great creatures. And, you know, we need to be respectful of them, not frightened of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like spiders in the bedroom at night, I must admit. But, you know, out in the garden, it's not a problem for me to come across a spider.
Do you know what you've just reminded me of? I was lying in bed last night.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in the diary is mice. For the next couple of weeks, we will do something on mice. Lying in bed last night, and I could hear a mouse in the bedroom. It's nothing new. And I could hear it gnawing at something. And I like, thinking, what are you? I was, you know, when you're almost asleep, when you've latched on to sleep. So I thought, I can't get up because then I'll be, why do I? So, you know, so I got a pillow and I threw it in the direction of what I could
noise.
Hear. And it stopped. It obviously ran away. But it was back 10 minutes later, making the same making the same noise.
Yeah.
No, I tell you exactly what it was under, or what it was after, under one of the drawers in the bedroom, sort of a piece of furniture in the bedroom. I have got some Christmas stuff that I bought last year and some stuff I've already been buying this year, little Christmas puddings, and it's food, basically. And it's in a big plastic curver box, a shallow curver box, but it's quite a sort of a big one, and it's stuffed underneath the drawer. It was gnawing that. The sense of smell that mice have must be amazing. To smell things that are in packets in a curver box, under a piece of furniture, I think I've underestimated the mice.
Well, all I can say, Molly, is we have a pantry that's hermetically sealed. You cannot get in
hermetically sealed or
out.
Yeah, right.
But there's a mouse in there. So how on earth?
How?
Well, this is it. Where is it coming from? How is it getting in?
It's
hermetically sealed.
It is in the diary. For Woodland Trust. I must get in touch with the Woodland Trust to find out just what on earth. It's like spiders. Everything's coming in. And the fly that I was chasing with the tea towel before we started the podcast today, everything wants to come in. I mean, we mustn't be selfish. We must share our heated homes to a point.
But according to Paul, those spiders aren't coming in.
No, they were already here.
They're already
here.
Here
all the time. See, all these things, mice, spiders, all these things, even the ladybirds now, I know they're there somewhere, but they do a good job of hiding, don't they?
I love the fact that Paul said they don't like us because we're big.
Imagine how scary it must be to a spider, especially if... How many eyes do they have? 6 million. No, that's legs.
Oh, that's legs in it.
I think about 6 million. Imagine six million of us in your sight. If you want to use and abuse Darren, you would be more than welcome. We pimp him out every week here on the Happy Garden podcast. So anything that you need to know. And don't forget, we're not here just for problem solving. If you want to share tips and success stories in your garden, propagation, maybe you followed some of Darren's rose propagation tips from a couple of weeks ago, or vegetable propagation from last week, then drop us a line, drop us a photo, which would be good. The Happy Garden Podcast at gmail.com. We like pictures, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, a photo is brilliant. And we like to have a nose around in people's gardens, don't we? Have a look in people's houses as well.
Yeah. So if you send us a picture of your plant, we're going to look in the background.
Just make sure you dust.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Yeah, the first comment is normally, nice curtains. Right, let's get on to Andy Lound, because he's been waiting for a little while. But we are going to be doing, well, Darren will be doing begonia care for you very, very shortly. After the beautiful, the fantastic, the amazing and astounding Andy Lounding. Today, well, it's Andy Lound. Today, he is going to teach us about the history of the foxglove.
It's Amaze and Astound with Andy Lound. That's me. Hello, Molly and Darren. Today's potted history is that wonderful plant, the foxglove, or digitalis. This plant goes down in history as bridging the gap between the wise women herbalists and the scientific medical doctors. Many plants have been used for medicinal purposes. The oldest written evidence of medicinal plants' usage for preparation of drugs has been found on a Sumerian clay slab from Nagpur approximately 5,000 years ago. It comprised 12 recipes for drug preparation, referring to over 250 various plants, some of them alkaloids such as the poppy, henbane and mandrake. Many of the herbalists in history were women, and these wise women were vital to a community, often living on the edge of a village or town surrounded by many plants. These women would be persecuted as witches, mainly because the Catholic Jesuit order insisted that all medical practitioners should have a degree from one of their universities and be male. The practice continued. The most famous book produced which described medicinal plants was that of Nicholas Culpeper, whose book of 1652 described the use of numerous plants. Dr. William Withering, member of the Lunar Society in Birmingham, was interested in herbalism, and he studied Culpeper's work and the more scientific work of Paracelsus. The breakthrough for Withering came when in 1784 he found that Mrs. Hutton was able to cure some of his patients. He visited her to find out what she was giving them. After some haggling and exchange of monies, she gave him the recipe. It was a mix of herbs and plants. He carried out experiments to see which ingredient was having the desired effect. He found it was digitalis, the foxglove. The foxglove is native to Europe, Western Asia and Northwestern Africa. The flowers are tubular in shape, produced on a tall spike, and vary in colour with species, from purple to pink, white and yellow. The scientific name means finger. Digitalis can be very toxic, hence it appears to be part of the plant's defensive system, but used sparingly, Withering found it could be used to treat conditions of the heart. He published in 1785, and this led to more scientific studies of plants as medicines. The actual chemical in digitalis is called digoxin and was isolated from the plant in 1930, which led to it to be synthesised for drug use. Plants are nature's chemical factories, producing millions of chemicals, some of which are potentially useful. Aspirin is probably the best known, produced from the willow, and has been used since 400 BCE as a painkiller and for reducing fevers. Yet it is only relatively recently that the mechanisms of how these chemicals work have been discovered, which has improved drug production. Here is an important point. The chemical synthesised in a laboratory has exactly the same formula as the one produced in a plant. So digitalis produced dioxin has a chemical formula C41H64O14. The lab produced is the same. So when people say they prefer herbal treatments rather than chemicals, they are actually taking chemicals produced by plants. And not pure either, as plants will have a combination of chemicals, and these combinations could be dangerous. The scientific revolution in the analysis of plants for medicinal purposes began with the foxglove. A side issue was that digitalis is an effective poison that breaks down in the body without a trace. Thus, it was a favourite plant for women who wanted to bump off their husbands. So, Molly and Darren, I think I need to check this salad carefully. That lettuce looks terribly suspicious. So, Molly and Darren, more from the potting shed next time.
Oh, thank you, Andy.
I'm
fabulous, as always. He's great. I always look forward. No offence, Andy, but I do always look forward to the end of his bits. Always something amusing.
He's brilliant, though, isn't he?
He's
ace. His knowledge is absolutely excellent.
Well, we ought to say, if there's anything that you want Andy Lowne to explore, and we always say this, you can chuck any word at Andy Lowne and he can do you a synopsis. He can do you a dissertation. He knows everything about everything. And if he doesn't know, then he'll certainly find out for you. So again, the Happy Garden Podcast at gmail.com for anything you'd like Andy to find out about for you. So, Darren, you're going to do your bulb propagation special in just a few minutes' time. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, just from a single bulb. How many bulbs do you think you can get, Molly?
Well, see, I didn't even know you could do this.
I tell you. Well, yes, yeah. It's a bit sort of witchcrafty.
Oh, harking back to last week. Well, we'll do that for you very, very shortly. First, let's get to John in Wolverhampton. He has emailed thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com. Molly, Darren, could you do a little snippet on begonia care, please? I normally lift mine when they finish flowering and dry out the corms for next year. As I've got a garden full of them, it can be a big job. Would they flower as well if I left them in pots and baskets over the winter months? Loving the podcast, guys. Regards, John in Wolves. Hi, John.
Well, John, you can leave them in pots and baskets, but the risk that you take is that they will rot. So that's why we take them out of the pots and the baskets, dry them off, make sure there's no damage, and you can buy what's called a puffer pack, which is sulfur. And any sort of damage on the corm itself, just give it a little puff of sulfur, and it's like an antiseptic, and it basically will clear the cut and the wound and will help the wound to actually heal and seal itself. But you can wrap them in newspaper, John, and then just store them away somewhere cool and dark for the winter months. Or you can put them into dry compost and, again, just store them away somewhere cool and dark. Make sure all the green growth is off them. Any soil or any compost, make sure that that is off them and they're nice and clean. And then just store them away. Like I said, you can leave them in the baskets and the pots, but the risk that you actually run is that they will sit in wet compost and they will just rot. So that's why we tend to take them out. Just check them. You can propagate them really, really easily by just cutting them into quarters and then letting them just store over winter and then pot them up. Perhaps do it in the spring. So if you do actually dry them out, when once you get them to activate into growth during the spring months when the temperature starts to rise, cut them into four and then just pot them up and you'll have four plants for the price of one. Really, really simple technique for you to use there. And that's the way to deal with your begonias, really.
Thank you, John. Thank you very, very much for your question. The Happy Garden Podcast at gmail.com if you want Darren to answer anything for you. Bulb propagation special in just two ticks. However, Darren, do you know who I can see out the window?
Oh! No.
Guess who is... Well, you won't guess, but I'll just say, guess who is at the top of the oak tree over there, 3 o'clock to my right, top branch, little splatter of white on her head, so I know it's her. It's Crozafine.
Who's Crozafine?
Crozafine. Have I not told you about Crozafine?
No, no.
Crozafine is a crow that I rescued.
Yeah, well, I guessed that bit.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, she's so, so lovely. And the fact that she still hangs around is just amazing. Long story short, and it's not a nice story, so I will really, really cut this short. There's a horrible man who shoots down the road. And whenever he's finished shooting, I go and just check if anything's still alive. 1 week, Crozafine was the one that was still alive. So I nursed her back to health. She'd been shot in the wing. Nursed her back to health. We're quite good friends. I love corvids. And we let her go, and there she is. And quite often I'll find her. She's at the top on that branch there. I know exactly where she sits and she's got a tiny bit of white on her head. So I know it's her. And there she is.
Wonderful.
Shall I send you a picture?
You're lovely. Yeah, send me a photo. I'd love to see Crozafine.
Yeah, hang on a second. I'll take a little video. There we are. Zoom in. Ah, hello, Crozafine. Yeah, let me send this to you. 1 second.
Got my phone open.
There you are. Have you got that? Have you got that? You see her at the top of the tree?
Yeah.
Oh, isn't she gorgeous?
She's lovely, yeah.
Hello. Oh. Anyway, I just thought I'd tell you. Anyway, back to the Happy Garden. Sorry. Just as you were answering that question, I was just leaning back in my chair and I happened to look outside and I thought, oh, look at my ears. So I thought I'd share. Anyway, shall we do your... I'm random, aren't I? But interesting.
No, it's all right. We understand you now. After about 15 years of knowing you, I think I've just got to the point where I understand you.
Yeah, okay. I find me interesting anyway. Let's do your bulb propagation special.
Yeah.
Now, I had no idea that you could do this with bulbs. Go ahead, Darren, impart your knowledge.
Well, many bulbs readily multiply by producing offsets without any help from the gardener folks. As well as taking advantage of this, it's quite simple to grow more of your favourite bulbs using just a few other techniques, including things like scaling, bulb bills, which is Molly's favourite word.
Love it.
Seed and division. Here's one thing that you can do if you happen to dig up a bulb. They do need to have been planted, folks, for you to do this. Perhaps have had a year in the garden. And it's called chipping. It's a really simple method for you to make lots and lots of bulbs from a single bulb. And the method works really well for daffodils, hippiastrums, alliums, fritillarias, irises and hyacinths. Any of those you can use this method for. And what you do is you lift a mature bulb out of the ground, make sure it's virus-free and it's leafless and it's dormant. So this time of year is absolutely excellent. Remove any of the papery outer skin and trim back the roots with a sharp knife. Remove the growing tip or the nose of the bulb. So just cut that off completely, folks. It's really important that you do that because you want these things to concentrate on making roots, not making the shoot. Hold the bulb with the base plate uppermost. Now, the base plate is the bit at the bottom and cut into 8 or 16 sections. These are called chips. Each of a similar size, depending on the bulb size. And make sure each chip has a portion of the basal plate. So the basal plate, you'll see the roots coming off. So each chip should have a portion of the basal plate and a few roots attached to it. Now leave them to drain for around about 12 hours because they'll be quite wet and fleshy. So leave them to drain. Place the chips in a clear plastic bag containing 10 parts fine vermiculite to 1 part water. Then blow up the bag with air and seal it and then label it. It's really important that you label it with the name of the bulb and the date you actually propagated it. Keep the bag in a dark place at around about 68 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 20 degrees Celsius, for around about 12 weeks. That's why it's important you pop a date on it in the first place. Check in occasionally to remove any rotting chips. During storage, the scales or the layers of each chip will separate into bulblets. These will form new bulbs at the basal plate, folks. Now, after 12 weeks, pot the chips into individual 3-inch pots of free-draining loam-based compost, such as John Innes number 2, and insert the chips with the basal plate downwards and the bulblets covered by about 1/2 inch in compost and leave the scales exposed. They will slowly rot away and the bulblets will develop. And then what you'll have is lots and lots and lots of new bulbs. And if they're narcissus, if they're irises, you'll have around about 8 to 16 plants from one bulb that you've actually propagated. So go on, have a go at chipping some of your favourite bulbs at this time of year, folks. It's an excellent time to do it. All you need is a bulb somewhere dark and warm, like the airing cupboard, and you'll propagate hundreds and hundreds of your favourite bulbs. There you go, Molly. What do you think about that?
I just love the word bulblet. I might call my next dog Bulblet.
Yeah.
Come here, Bulb.
Bulbil.
Bulbil. Come here, Bulbil. Bulblet. Bulblet green, please. I always think when you call, you know, your dogs or your cats called in the veterinary surgery, it's very embarrassing. Bulblet green, please.
They always put my surname on my pets.
Bear Roach. So
we've got a dog called Molly, as you know.
Yeah.
And when we take it to the vet comes out and goes, Molly Rudge!
I like that. I really like that. I do. It's nice. Oh, so if the other dog was there, it would be Bear Rudge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that sounds quite macho, doesn't it?
It does, actually.
Bear Rudge.
That'd be a really good name. I enjoyed that. Thank you.
Oh.
Darren?
Yes. Hello?
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 Hello? Hi. What do you call a man who can't stand up?
Go on.
Neil. Cute.
That's so obvious.
Yet you didn't get it.
No. Not fair.
Do you think you can do better?
Yes.
Prepare yourselves. Okay. After, I've done Nigel West Brom, who says, recently in the garden, Molly Darren, I've been putting all the herbs in alphabetical order. How do I find time, you ask? He says it's easy.
Go on. It's after parsley.
Yeah, right next to the sage. Good. Get in there.
See, I knew that one.
And then at the end he says, P.S., which reminds me, I must get some bulbs and plant them for the spring. I think
naughty. Naughty, man.
It's sarcasm.
Naughty.
Brilliant. Right, let's see if you can do better.
Now in the happy garden.
It's about time for some Alan Titters. Brace yourself for your gardening jokes of the week from Darren Rudge.
Brace yourselves. Come on then, Dazzler. Let the dog see the rabbit.
Did you hear, Molly, about the piece of corn that was forever getting into trouble?
Corn. Trouble forever. No.
He used to get quite an earful from his mother.
Good, Darren, good. I'm pleased with you on that one.
Well, okay.
Next.
Why did the carrot make a hair appointment?
Carrot. Oh, I don't know.
Its roots were showing.
Good, yeah, also good. Good, Darren. Next.
Why was the salad so very, very tired?
Oh, I was hoping I'd work this one out, but I don't know.
They've been tossing and turning all night.
There we go, the word tossing. Good, Darren.
What prompted them...
do you want to start that again?
Yeah.
It's the way you tell them, Darren. Go.
What prompted the last massive vegetable protest?
Vegetable? Don't know.
Privileged information was leaked. That's tenuous, isn't it?
5 out of 10.
All right.
Next.
What horror movie do all vegetables love?
God, nothing to do with ketchup, is it? I don't know.
Silence of the Yams.
Okay. I like that. Any bonus jokes, or is that it? 5 out of 5?
No, only 5.
Good. Quite pleased with you on that score, Darren.
It's all right. There was only one that was a bit iffy.
Yeah, was it number 4?
Number 4, yeah.
Let yourself down. You let me down. You let the whole school down. So said the inflatable boy.
Sorry.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, I've got something for you, Darren.
Uh-oh.
No, it's nice.
What's that then?
I found this the other day. Listen.
Darren is born on a Christmas day. On a Christmas day, to save the lives of the plants, give a new life through the year.
Tom! Oh, Tom.
Listen to Tom singing.
I wonder if Tom listens to our podcast.
I don't know.
We'd love to hear from Tom, wouldn't we?
He was always making up beautiful songs.
He was.
And that one was dedicated to Darren's birthday, which, as you just heard, is Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day.
Darren was sent to save the lives of the plants.
I like the way he says plants.
He's very posh. He's from Warwickshire.
Plants.
Let's hear it again.
Darren is born on a Christmas Day, on a Christmas Day, to save the lives of the plants. Give a new life through the year.
There's a bit of vibrato there as well. He's very good.
He's great, Tom.
If you're still listening,
give us a call.
Yeah. Well,
get in touch.
There's no phone number.
All right. Well,
leave us in touch. Leave us your phone number and we might call you. Yeah. The Happy Garden Podcast at gmail.com. Oh, I'll tell you what was on the Happy Garden Podcast Facebook page this week, which made me guffaw, Darren.
From Mick.
The picture of, it says, it might be Halloween, Molly, but my beans, tomatoes and bulbs are already making an appearance. And he sent a picture of a raised bed. Have you seen this? And in it is a tin of Heinz baked beans, a tin of peeled plum tomatoes and a light bulb. So he's got his tomatoes, bulbs and beans making an appearance. That really did make me laugh.
Fantastic.
Dazzler Pants, we're almost done.
Wow.
I know.
That's gone really quick.
Well, that's because we have been quick. We're obviously getting more efficient because normally it takes us 3 hours.
Oh, no.
To construct the Happy Garden Podcast. We're only at an hour 20, so we've done... I'm very pleased with us both today.
I thought I was sleeping at your place last week.
At one point, Darren went all small and he went, I'd like to go home
now. No, please. Can I see my mummy? Yeah. Please.
I need to go home. So, yeah, we're obviously getting far more efficient, which is great. We've got jobs for the week ahead. What are you doing when we finish, though? Because we'll be done in about 5 minutes' time. What does this afternoon hold for you?
Well, this afternoon holds a study pack, which I'll send to you.
No.
Yeah, and you haven't done your homework from your previous study pack that I sent. So I'm a bit disgusted about.
What are you still constructing study packs?
Yeah, well, we're writing as we go because we're teaching a new programme. It's brand new for the whole country.
Oh, go on, what are you doing?
Well, it's an RHS certificate and it's a level 3 certificate in practical horticulture. That's what I'm teaching at the moment.
Explain the levels, actually, Darren. You mentioned level 3. I mean, what's the scale?
Well, level 3 is sort of an advanced level. So it's an A level or an AS level. Level 2 is like your old-fashioned O level or as an ology. That's where, and level 1 is introductory. So that's basically how it works. They're all sort of pre-higher education, but actually level 3 can form what we call a foundation certificate to move into higher education if you want to move on to a horticultural degree in any way. It's deeper thinking, and that's the problem. It's because I'm sitting here deep thinking when I'm writing these study packs. But you've seen them, haven't you? You've seen someone come
they
to my
are
study
fabulous.
Packs. They're all right, aren't they?
What kind of people do you teach? What's the sort of the demographic of people who study under you?
It's the whole range, Molly. We get very few youngsters, sort of 16, 17-year-olds, because people normally go into employment and then decide that whatever they've decided to do is not for them, and horticulture is. Mm. So we get people in their 20s, basically, right the way through to mature retired people. I've got people in my classes that are there, as I've said, in their 20s. I've got people working at historic gardens, at garden centres, people that are self-employed, right the way through to retired people, people that have had, a life and a career. We've got doctors, solicitors, nurses, all wow. sorts of people coming to us that just want to get into gardening and horticulture.
Who's
it's absolutely fabulous.
What would be the oldest age that you've had studying?
The oldest person I've ever had was in their 80s.
Oh, amazing.
We used to do what was called lifelong learning courses, and unfortunately they're no longer available because of funding and things like this. But lifelong learning courses were absolutely fabulous. So we used to get loads of retired people that come along and just have a go at gardening. It's
love
fantastic.
It.
Really
love
great.
It. I love what you do. Brilliant.
Oh, thank you. I do as well.
Oh, good job. If you love what you do, then you never work a day in your life.
Well, exactly. That's it. And I always say to people that I go to work to enjoy myself. So I go to work to have some fun.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we do, is we have fun in the classroom.
Do you know, I waved my husband off to work this morning, literally out the window. But as before he left, as he was doing his flask and getting his lunchbox ready, I did say, because we could already see it was going to be the most beautiful day today, that the sky was already blue as the sunrise, the peach and the orange colours in the sky. We knew it was going to be a lovely day. And I did say to him, how lucky are you? So many people work in an office. So many people will be suited and booted. Nothing wrong with it, of course. And nothing wrong with office work at all. But I just said, how lucky are you that your office today, because he's a bit of an arborealist and he does gardening and he's a bit like you, Darren. But I said, how lucky are you that your office is under this blue sky today? There is nothing nicer than being outside on day, well, any day, but especially under the blue autumnal skies.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's what gives me a total and utter buzz. It really, really is. Being outside, working environment. You know, at the college I used to work for, this was the problem, that I was a manager and I was looking too much at spreadsheets rather than being outside. You know, I was made redundant and that probably did me a massive favour. What I do now is so diverse. Never, ever know what the day holds, and it's a constant challenge. And that's what's great about it. That's what's great about gardening. Is you never, ever, ever know what you're going to come across. And every day is a new challenge. And that's how it should be. It's fantastic.
It's really nice when I message you at any point of the week about anything and I say, you know, how are you? What are you doing? Always, there's always a different reply. I can never say, like, Darren's doing this midday on a Tuesday. Darren's doing this 3 o'clock on a Thursday, because every day is different. It's a real privilege.
Yeah, it is. And it is. That's the word. It's a real, real privilege to do what I do and the many things that I actually get into. It is a fantastic privilege.
Darren, I can see another diary entry coming in just to finish with. I'm putting this on a future podcast list as well. And that is a change of professional direction. Now, I'm thinking you could do a slot on this on a future podcast. If there is anybody listening who is sick to the back teeth of their job, whatever field it's in. I mean, horticulture, what a profession. And you're the person to ask about it. So should I stick that down for a podcast in future?
Most definitely. And I think you ultimately have to be very, very brave to make a massive change in your life. But there are so many people that are doing this, folks. And we inspire so many people to actually do this. And there's lots and lots and lots of support out there. It's why I run a community interest company as well, Molly, because we're helping people to change their lives. And our strapline for that company is growing people through plants. So that's what we do.
Fabulous. That's another thing. I'm putting that in the diary as well. Plug Darren's business.
Plug Darren's business. Yeah. Please do.
There we go. That's in the diary as well. We have so much fun to have in future podcasts. Shall we try and finish this one, though, with some jobs for the week ahead?
Yes.
Now in the happy garden.
Oh, I say, sweetie, this is my favourite bit. Time for Darren to be absolutely flabulous and regale us with his gardening jobs for the week ahead.
Yes. Go.
Okay, make sure that all the fallen leaves are raked off your lawn. Or how about getting the lawnmower out, stick it on its highest cut, folks, and then mow those leaves and collect in a bag. They're already shredded then, and you can make leaf mould. Leaf mould is really simple to do. Pop it into an old compost bag or a polythene bag. Tiddle on it. Yes, I did mention tiddle on it. Put some bone meal in there, and then leave it for around about 8 months, and you'll have wonderful leaf mould you can return to the garden. If your lawns are very wet, then don't walk on them, folks. But once you can walk on them, aerate them, scarify them, and it's still not too late to put an autumn weed and feed down and bulk that lawn up for the winter. Mowing can continue during drier spells, so keep it tidy and tidy up those lawns. Fruit trees and bushes can be planted now. Control weeds and grass around fruit trees and bushes as well. And prune and tie in trained trees, such as your apples and your pears and your espaliers and your cordons. And just make sure that you just have a really good tidy up. Any weeds that are around, weed them out of your garden spaces and check for pests in your greenhouse and your conservatory. And finally, stop watering. Leave plants on the dry side now. And certainly do not feed any of your houseplants. You're wasting your time, and most of all, you're wasting your money.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Darren. And for once, not for once, that makes it sound awful, but it will be a pleasure to follow your tips for jobs for the week ahead in this weather. There is nothing nice. It sort of bolsters you, doesn't it? You want to be outside. You want to be creative and proactive and, you know, physically doing stuff in this weather. I think everyone will follow your jobs this week.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous weather and a gorgeous day to be out there today. Just get out there. All you've got to do is step outside, folks, and you might just be surprised.
Even on dull days in winter, though, it is like today, the blue sky, it's just, it does my mental health so much good, the colours against the blue sky. But even on a grey day, the colours, I said the other day, driving down the dual carriageway, I don't know if there were London plane trees. I'm not sure what was flanked. In fact, it wasn't a dual carriageway, it was just a big road. I think we were flanked with London plane trees. And I said to my husband, it's like the whole ground either side was covered with crunchy nut cornflakes. That was the exact colour. So even on a grey day, the colours of autumn just, I think, do your mental health good. I remember when my mum used to take myself and my sister out and we used to do crayon rubbings, like wax crayon rubbings of autumn leaves, like big autumn leaves, and we used to put them in a scrapbook.
Yeah.
I think just autumn does your soul good.
They're lovely. Mm. Your mum's lovely.
Oh, Oh, she is, isn't she? We used to do brass rubbings of post boxes, I remember that. And then also the wax crayon rubbings of the big leaves that come down this time of year. And we used to put them in a scrapbook as well.
Fantastic. It's lovely. Absolutely fantastic. And when, you know, we do children sessions with school children, we get them to build a plant, Molly, at this time of year.
Hmm.
You know, we get them to collect twigs and leaves, big piece of paper on the floor in the classroom, and we just get them to stick things on.
Nice.
And basically they make a plant. So it's fantastic. It's really great.
It is. It's great, lovely. Fun. Inspirational great fun. Time of year.
Yeah.
Well, for next week on the Happy Garden podcast, Darren, I've got so much in the diary, but I don't want to say too much in case it doesn't come off. So we don't...
Exactly. Leave them wanting for
leave
more.
Wanting more. One thing, though, as we have been recording the pod today, our Dazzler, I've just got a lovely email in, which hopefully you will be able to deal with next week. Molly, Darren, loving the new podcast series. Thank you. Can I request a bit of information on cyclamen?
Okay.
There are so many in the shops right now, big and small, all sorts of colours. Now, see, Darren, I've asked you this before. Are these indoor houseplants or should they be in the garden? Whenever I've bought them in the past, at this time of year, they haven't lasted long. So I'm assuming either they don't like being indoors, but I'm not sure. I look forward to any advice. Keep up the smiles. And that's Robert in Wincanton in Somerset. So could you do a bit of a cyclamen slot?
I will. I'll do a cyclamen special next week, Robert. The answer is quite simple. Okay.
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 And also another one, but hopefully this will be next week, but we'll see. We like to leave things fluid. But another one on mushrooms. And Darren, we must have had at least four or five in this week about mushrooms in the garden. Are they poisonous? Why are they there? Should we get rid of them? Can I eat them? That's the predominant question. Can I eat them? So whether it's next week or a couple of weeks, on the agenda very, very soon on the Happy Garden podcast, we will address mushrooms. And Darren, you're good on mushrooms because...
I'm a fun guy.
There we go. I'll set it up, you kick it in.
Fist bump, fist bump.
That's the one. Mic drop. So, yeah. Lots coming up on next week's podcast. Well, in the next couple of weeks anyway. But thank you for listening today. What are you up to now then, Dazzler? You've got to do your study packs.
Well, I'm going to go out and have a nice cup of coffee now.
And
then I might just have a walk outside.
Yeah.
And then I've got a couple of study packs to do tonight.
Kick some leaves.
And prepare a quotation for a client that I went to see this morning.
Oh, fabulous. All go in the Rudge household.
Yes.
Well, thank you for listening to the Happy Garden podcast this week, and we will see you for another exciting jam-packed episode next week. Thank you, Dazzler.
Happy gardening, folks.
Ta-ra!
Bye.
You've been listening to Molly Green and Darren Rudge. If you'd like to get in touch with them, email thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com or follow them on social media. Just search for The Happy Garden Podcast. Tune in next week for another edition, and as Molly Green would always say,
Happy Gardening!
'Cause I
own the piece. Oh my God, yeah, sorry. Happy gardening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.